Mazel tov, mazel tov, a curse on all the Jews. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Greetings, fuckers. This might be the only podcast you get this week. Last week, you only got one because I was busy as fuck. By the time I got to Saturday, I could have recorded a podcast on Saturday, but I'm not going to bullshit you. I was tired, mentally tired, more than physically tired, and I played about 7 hours of Star Wars. And that's what I did with Saturday. And it was good. I needed that because I hadn't hardly played Star Wars. A little bit here, a little bit there. And yes, there's a new update. And yes, they fucked it up. And yes, people are pissed off. People are pissed off. Ah, God. Anyhow, we're not here to talk about a bunch of assholes ruining my computer game. We're here to talk about a bunch of assholes ruining theater. Something that I love even more than Star Wars. So I mentioned a while back that I went to see a play put on by a local theater, and it was good. It was very good. I enjoyed the hell out of it. So then I saw this other company in town. Who the fuck are these people? I'm looking at... How do you not have the name of your theater on the front? Here it is, Black Hills Community Theater. All right, so these people are doing Fiddler on the Roof. Now, those of you who know Fiddler on the Roof are already going, oh my God, great one. It's about Jews. Yes, it's about Jews, okay? And if you can fucking get over it for a minute, I'm going to explain to you a whole lot of stuff about this play, this musical, that is about Majews, otherwise known as kikes, otherwise known as parasites. Okay? So then I could do Fiddler on the Roof. I mean, it's a great play. It's got some fantastic songs. It's got funny as hell shit in it. Absolutely hilarious. There's, you know, a war going on with Israel right now. What is there not to love? So I'm walking to the theater because I'm going to a matinee, a 2 p.m. showing. Going to the matinee, and I'm looking around at all the other people going into the theater, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, this is nothing but boomers. And it was, the audience was packed with boomers. And I don't know, 60% or more women. Women boomers. It's like, why are all these fucking boomers at the fucking mat? Oh, that's right, because they can't stay awake late enough. Because it's over a 3-hour show. If you start at 7:30 at night, they can't stay awake that long to sit through the entire show. You say, well, great one. Why the fuck did you go to a matinee? I said, well, because I can't stay awake that late at night. All right, that's past my bedtime. I like matinees. I can go in there, I can see the show, I can come out. It's still daylight. I still got time to have a few drinks if the show really sucked. I want to try to kill the brain cells that remember it. I like matinees, except for the boomers. My fucking notes. All right. So let's go sequence of events, more or less. Now, I got notes here. I took notes. I'm scribbling notes on piece of paper while the play is going on in the dark. So I think I've successfully deciphered most of what I wrote down, but who knows? One important question here. So the play gets started. I'm asking myself, how come there are no Jews of color? All the Jews up there are white people. There is literally Hitler. Now look, we all know, right? We all know archaeological evidence has told us, just like the first Europeans were actually niggers. Guys, the first Jews were niggers. So how come there are no nigger Jews? They're all white. I was really almost enraged by the lack of diversity. Speaking of that, I mean, Band of Brothers, I'm still slogging through Band of Brothers. I'm about to start part 8. And you know what I noticed or didn't notice, or maybe I'm wrong, but suddenly, partway through Band of Brothers, it starts having Oh, I didn't mention the reason you may only get one podcast this week is because I feel like shit. Just like the allergy, whatever it is that happens to me every year when we go into spring is happening now. I got a little bit of a headache and a little bit of a sore throat and a little bit of agitation. Oh, wait, I have agitation all the time. But anyhow, I don't feel on the top here. I'm not my best self. Took a shower, popped some aspirin. I'd have a drink, but it's a carnivore day, so all I can have today is animal products. And unfortunately, neither whiskey nor gin are made from animals. Although if you know of any alcohol that is made from animals, and you can fill me in on that, I wonder if you could make, make alcohol out of animal blood. Is that a thing? Well, you need blood. I mean, you make vodka out of potatoes. I don't know. I gotta look into that. Carnivore alcohol. So I'm looking at Band of Brothers, and in addition to the fact that none of the soldiers are niggers, none of the German soldiers are niggers, and then they liberate this town because they're in Europe somewhere, and there's no niggers. And then they're staying in this church overnight, not a church, a convent, and the nuns bring in the local choir kids to sing for the soldiers. And I'm looking at, you know, as these little young girls, and Joseph Biden is not sniffing them, which I'm sure was upsetting to him because some of them were cute. But I'm looking at all these little young choir girls in this European village, and they're all white. There were no fucking choir girls of color. Like, where are the niggers? Fortunately, however, yesterday morning I did go to the gym, and on the TV commercials, all I saw was nigger women. It was nigger woman after nigger woman after nigger woman. I got Bitdefender on my computers as my antivirus, and you have to turn off the advertising pop-ups, otherwise you get them. And I'm sitting there doing the thing on the computer, on one of the computers, I forgot to turn off the pop-ups, and the little pop-up comes up in the right-hand bottom corner of my computer trying to sell me something, and there's a picture of a nigger woman. Because when I'm thinking cybersecurity, the first thing that comes to my mind is nigger women. So I'm looking at this play. This cast is coming out onto the stage, and they're dancing around, and I'm looking. All I see is a bunch of, where's the nigger women? It's all white people. Fiddler on the Roof, in a nutshell, is about tradition. It's about maintaining tradition, and it's about breaking tradition. Now, you're going to, it's about the Jews. It's a propaganda piece about the Jews. Okay, let me just go ahead and get this out of the way for the retarded people in the audience. Number one, all art is propaganda. All of it. Okay? If you're running around going, that's a propaganda piece, congratulations, fucktard. Bravo. Bravo. All theater is propaganda. As I've said before, what matters is, can you create entertainment and then insert the propaganda, or do you just start with the propaganda, which is what happens nowadays? Yes, Fiddler on the Roof is a propaganda piece for the Jews, but it's well written. It's funny as hell. It's got some great songs. And that allows you, and see, here's the point, for you propagandists out there, for you libtards who are trying to use theater to shove nigger women down my throat, see, this is the problem. When you just come out the gate straight with nigger women and you throw the nigger women at me, this doesn't work. But if you give me something like Fiddler on the Roof and you do it well, and we'll talk about whether or not it was done well, and you do it well, it's so entertaining and it's so funny and the songs are so great and everything like this that I let my defenses down, and your propaganda can slip through. And at the end, when the Jews get evicted, hey guys, did you know that yet again the Jews got thrown out of the place? Remember, when 109 countries throw you out, obviously it's not you, it must be them. When the Jews get evicted at the end, I almost felt sorry for them. Almost. Yeah, some of these guys are okay. I mean, you know, Tavia, he's all right. I can't feel sorry for his daughters. I mean, you know, they're women. They can't help it. They're just property. They don't really even understand what's going on. Yes, it's a propaganda piece for the Jews, but it's a well-crafted propaganda piece. And if you wanted to propagandize for the Jews, you would do this play and you would do it well, and it might work. Anyhow, this is a play about tradition. It's about the traditions of the Jews, the people who are, of course, attempting to destroy our traditions. So sort of the thesis of this play is that there's this conflict between tradition and the changing times. And we'll talk about that as we go forward. I'm going to assume that you out there don't know anything at all about this play. So we're not going to do a fucking blow-by-blow recount here, but I am going to explain things and assume you don't know the play. So to back up slightly, before the play starts, this fat woman, naturally, fat white woman, naturally, waddles her ass out onto the stage to make the pre-show announcements, which I always hate. That is so fucking ghetto for theater, to have somebody waddle out there on the stage, because it's almost always a fat person. They waddle out there on the stage and we have to thank our sponsors and turn off your cell phone. And of course, somebody's cell phone went off during the play, probably a boomer woman. Because even though a fat woman waddles out there and tells you to turn your fucking cell phone off, you still can't be bothered to do it. Because you, of course, don't have to turn your cell phone off because you're the fucking exception to the rule, aren't you? Because you're special. You're a boomer woman. So the fat white woman waddles out onto the stage and makes her announcements that no one cares about and tells people to turn off their phones, which they don't do. And then, of course, she has to apologize for white people and recognize the original inhabitants of the land from whom it was stolen. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what the fuck, am I in Australia now? So anyhow, this is probably the last time I will ever go to a production by the Black Hills Community Theater. And I did contemplate getting up and walking out. I thought, well, I paid my money. It's Fiddler on the Roof. How bad can they fuck it up? I'm going to stay. But I truly did contemplate, do I get up and walk the fuck out? So we go into the play and we sing tradition, 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 you know, and who does the work and brings home the bread? The papa, the papa. And then you do the who takes care of the home and cooks the food and minds the children so that the father could study the holy book? The mama, the mama. You know, and then, well, who is the apprentice and who learns things to become a good man when he's older? The sons, the sons. And then you have who is demure and learns housekeeping skills and doesn't have a big obnoxious mouth so that she can marry whomever Papa chooses. The daughter, so that she can, ladies and gentlemen, marry whomever Papa chooses. Oh, the audible gasp from the boomer women in the audience. Marry whomever father chooses. Oh, we can't have that. So right after that song, you dare some more dancing. Then they go into the matchmaker song. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find. Catch me a catch. So you see, in the olden days of the Judens, right? They had the matchmakers. You go around and say, I've got a perfect match for your son. I got a match for your daughter. And then the fathers would decide, she'll marry this one, she'll marry that one, she'll marry this one. Very patriarchal. At the same time, this is what the Jews used to do. Now, if you're opposed to this, doesn't that make you kike-phobic? We, all these boomer women in the audience just gasping at the matchmaker song as if they've never heard this before. Like, okay, if you're so fucking liberated that this like, idea of, I don't even know, hold on, what year is this supposedly take place in? I'm not really sure. I'm not that much of an expert on this play or anything. Does it fucking say anywhere in the playbill? I could try typing it into Google. I don't know. All right, I don't know. It takes place in Russia. I say obviously. Well, when did Lenin happen? Because one of the students is a communist. So slightly before World War II? Like after Lenin became prominent and known? After Leninism was spreading? But I'm pretty sure before World War II? So somewhere in that range? But I mean, the matchmaker song, so the three girls, so Tavia, the lead character, Tavia, his wife is Golda. I guess you pronounce it either. These Jewish names, some of these Jewish names are beyond me. Golda. And then he has five daughters, as he announces in the opening play, he says, I have five daughters. These are laugh lines when they're delivered correctly. These are laugh lines, right? Because they're singing about the daughters, yeah. I have five daughters, you know, and a nice eye roll and a good, it's funny stuff, unless you're a woman. So the three oldest daughters, because the two youngest daughters, they just kind of hang out during the play. They're too young. Well, I mean, okay, they're not too young for Joseph Biden. I mean, Biden would enjoy sniffing the younger ones, but they're too young for anybody other than Biden and maybe DigiBro. They might be a little too old for DigiBro. Anyhow, the oldest three daughters, they're singing the matchmaker song. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find. Catch me a catch. And the two youngest ones are singing about how, oh, I want the matchmaker to bring me a man who's rich so that my mother's happy. And he's a good man so that my father's happy. Because you see, the writers of this play understood what's important to women. Money. Once again, it's Jewish propaganda, but there's kernels of truth all through it. This surfaces a couple of times. The most important thing to women is money. It's in there. And then the girl singing, and make him good looking for me, you know. And then the eldest daughter, who's going to be the first one who gets married off, because you marry them off in order that they were born. You know, tradition, Jewish tradition, which I'm pretty sure opposing Jewish tradition is kike-phobic. Especially when there's no kikes of color up there on the stage. All the kikes are looking white. Where's your kike-versity, right? Don't we need kike-versity? Where's the nigger kike? Sorry, kike of color. Color kike. Is it kike of colored kike? Kike of color. So in the eldest daughter, she sings, oh, but what if you get this ugly guy, and this one might be a drunk, and this one might beat you, but he'll only beat you when he's sober, and since he's drunk all the time, it's all right. And, oh, you're going to get this guy. He's going to be really old and really fat and really bald. You know. And then the girls are like, oh, matchmaker, matchmaker, take your time. Don't rush things. I'm still young. It's a great song, and it's funny. Right, because these girls are singing about their Cinderella fantasy. And then the oldest daughter, like, drops the bomb. What if you get married to someone you don't like and who's... And they're like, oh, okay, hold on, we could wait. It's funny. It's great. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And the fucking boomer women in the audience are just gasping out loud multiple times at this notion of these girls being married to someone they didn't choose. And I'm thinking to myself, girls, how's choosing your husband working out for you now? How many single mothers are there out there? How many of you are married to abusive men? Right? Well, you know, men are all assholes. Oh, why are these men these men are assholes? Well, who chose to marry them? Oh, you did. Wow. So how's this working out for you? Choosing your own husband. How's that working for you? Well, if my father chose my husband, it wouldn't be any better because my father's an asshole. Oh, really? Your father's an asshole. Your father doesn't care about you, his daughter, enough to make sure you marry a good man. Wow. Who was it that decided to marry your father, the asshole who doesn't care about his daughter? Oh, that's right. It was your mother. She made that decision. Yes, you women, you're doing such a great job deciding who you should marry. Yes, you're knocking it out of the fucking park on this one. Women should literally be the property of their fathers. And this is not a joke. So now, as the play is starting off, there's a whole lot of stuff in here that is just not kosher, if you know what I mean. There's stuff about deciding who your daughter is going to marry. There's stuff that's sexist because the men and the women are very separate from each other. And again, this is a theme throughout the play. We'll talk about this a little bit more. But there are very distinct and clear roles based upon age and gender. Sorry, sex. I used the G word. I apologize. My fuck up. I'm going to blame the fact that I'm feeling crappy. Although I'm feeling better now that I'm yelling at a microphone. It's amazing how yelling at the internet makes me feel a little bit better. I apologize, however. I used the G word. I will try not to do that again. Right? Again, the first song, there's the papas, and they have their role and responsibility. There's the mamas. They have their roles and responsibilities. There's the sons. They have roles and responsibilities. And there are the daughters, and they have roles and responsibilities. So throughout the opening, I don't know, because so I watched the whole thing. The acting got better later on. So in the early parts of the play, when they're doing the tradition song and the matchmaker song, and let me look, what's the next song after matchmaker? Oh, if I were a rich man, yabba dabba 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 dabba. Where Tevye sings about, he says, hey, God, he talks to God. God! You guys remember God, right? The thing that all these intelligent... Well, great one. Aren't you an atheist? Yes, but I don't have to talk about it all the fucking time. I don't have to run around pretending I'm smarter than people who believe in gods because I don't believe in God. I may or may not be smarter than someone who believes in God, but it's not necessarily because they believe in God and I don't, right? So once again, we're sitting, it's a theater, I'm surrounded by boomer women who want to be enlightened. I just know from experience that the percentage of people in this audience who are atheist is higher than, I don't know, than if you go to NASCAR or a rodeo. And I know that the percentage of women in this audience who are spiritual but not religious is higher than almost any place other than if you went to like a yoga studio. So he talks to God throughout the play. And he has some very, again, he has some very funny interactions with God. You know, he's talking back and forth with God. I mean, oh, God isn't actually talking, but he's talking. It's funny shit. And in the early part of the play, I was looking, I'm going, okay, do the actors just not know their lines? Or are they just not that good at acting? Or are they just really reluctant to say these lines that are really fucking funny because they are what today your average progressive boomer atheist bitch would consider racist, sexist, transphobic, patriarchal, whatever. And in the end, I'm going to conclude that it was them being scared to say the lines because the acting was pretty damn good all around. There was nobody in this play that I thought, ah, that person's weak. Everybody was, again, it's a community theater, right? We're not doing Broadway. I've seen Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway. Not on Broadway. I've seen Broadway touring. I do not go to New York. There's nothing in New York I want other than to drop a nuclear warhead on it. So I'm convinced that the actors were just too wound up to deliver the lines in a way that was funny. And the audience was too fucking wound up to laugh. There are some hilarious bombs dropped and no laughter. Lots of gasping, though. So anyhow, I covered that. All right, so anyhow, Jewish society at this time was, of course, a sexist patriarchy, which is, look, again, you can hate the Jews all you want. That doesn't mean they didn't do some things right in the past. I mean, right now, well, I mean, once again, the Jews, okay, guys, the Jews have their own fucking ethnostate, and they have the United States of America willing to send troops around the world to die to protect the Jews. Okay, the Jews are doing it right. They control our media. They control our corporations. They control our movies. They control our television. They control our theaters. They control our military. They control our government. They control our banks. I don't know. Maybe if fucking lazy ass fucking white people could get off their ass and just do, I don't know, 10% of what the Jews are doing. Yeah, they're evil, but they're accomplishing shit. They're doing what's best for their people. Fascinatingly enough, they're doing what's best for their people, unlike whites, who can't stop cucking for niggers and Jews. All right, I did all that. All right, so let's talk about the daughters. Tradition, the daughters, tradition. So Laser Wolf, yes, that's his name, Laser, like pew, 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 laser gun, Wolf, like ow, Laser Wolf. I don't know, is Laser Wolf a real Jewish name? I don't know. Laser Wolf wants to marry the name of the main character. Tevye. God damn, my brain. I have it somewhere. My brain. Tevye. Laser Wolf wants to marry Tevye's oldest daughter. Title. And so there's a whole thing where there's a mistaken conversation because Laser Wolf is talking about Tidal and Tevye is talking about his cow. And it's funny. And then they do that. And they agree. All right, you're going to marry my daughter. So he goes home and he tells his daughter, all right, you're going to get married to the butcher. She's very unhappy because, you see, she's in love with the tailor, who is kind of a loser. But they've known each other since they're kids. They grew up together. They're in love. So then we find out that they have made a pledge to each other that they would get married. And Tevye is like, you can't do this. This goes against tradition. I decide who you get married to. And they're like, oh, but Papa, we're in love. Oh, you know, okay. They do that thing. And so then he decides, all right, fine. And Tevye has these great moments where he steps aside and he does this on one hand, on the other hand, right? He said, well, if she marries the butcher, she'll never be hungry. And the butcher's rich, right? So, but then, you know, this kid's a dork. This tailor is a dork, but she loves him. And, you know, what's more important? She's be happy or whatever. There's a great line later on in the play where Tevye says, yeah, they've been married for whatever it is, 6 months or whatever. And he says, they're poor. You know, he says something like, they're poor as hell and they've got nothing, but they're so happy they don't know it. So the tradition, of course, is that the father decides who the daughter is going to marry. The daughter marries him. She wants to marry the man she loves, not the man her father wants her to marry. So he, in the end, decides, all right, we're going to throw out tradition. I'm going to back you up on this. You can marry the tailor. I'll tell the butcher, Laser Wolf, you're not going to marry him. But then it occurs to him, oh, shit, what am I going to do about the wife? Because I told Golda, you know, Golda's in on this. And, of course, Golda wants Tidal to marry the butcher because the butcher is rich. Because what's important to women? Money. I mean, you say, great, when they're Jews. Money is, no. But again, above and beyond the other Jews, what's important to Jewish women? Money. What's important to women? Money. See, there's truth. If you can ignore the fact that the characters are Jews, this thing is filled with truths. All right, so now Tevye's got to figure out how to get Goldie on board with this, because you can't just go over there and say, like, yeah, she's not going to get married to the rich guy anymore. She's going to marry this tailor who has nothing. He's poorer than fuck. That's not going to fly. So then, in another brilliant moment of understanding how women work, right? So Tevye, he wakes up in the middle of the night next to his wife. He's, I just had this nightmare. She's like, what? A dream. Well, you tell me what you dreamed and I'll tell you what it means. He says, we were at this wedding and Tidal and Laser Wolf were getting married, and Laser Wolf had a wife and she died. We don't know why she died. Maybe he killed her because she wouldn't shut the fuck up. Who the hell knows? Her name is Fruma Sarah. Not Bruma, Fruma, F-R-U, Fruma Sarah. So Laser Wolf says, I had this dream. We're at the wedding, and Tidal and Laser Wolf are getting married, and then the ghost of Fruma, before the ghost of Fruma Sarah, the ghost of Goldie's grandmother shows up. She says, oh, this is so great. My great-granddaughter is getting married. Oh, and she's marrying the tailor. And Tavia's like, no, Grandma, she's marrying the butcher. And Grandma's like, no, she's marrying the tailor. Well, but Grandma, we had this deal with the butcher that he would marry our daughter. And Grandma says, I don't care what kind of deal you made. My granddaughter is going to marry the tailor, not the butcher. So Tevye relates this to his wife. And then so they're at the wedding in his dream, and they're getting married. And then Fruma Sarah's ghost shows up. She says, how dare you allow your daughter to marry my husband and lay in my bed and live in my clothes and live in my clothes, live in my house and wear my clothes. And so if they get married the third week of their marriage, I'm going to come and strangle your daughter. And so Tevye relates all this to his wife. And his wife is like, Golda's like, oh my gosh, well, if my grandmother came all the way from the other world to you in this dream to warn us about marrying the butcher. Well, obviously we can't let her marry the butcher. She's got to marry the tailor. And Tevye's like, whew, because what did he do? He made her think it was her idea. That's how you get girls to do shit. You could be all like, oh, I'm going to boss you around and tell you what to do. And sometimes you do that. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes that works. But in something like this, it's just like I always said about breaking up with women. Never break up with your girlfriend. Never break up with your girlfriend. If you haven't heard this before, because I haven't talked about this in a long time, guys, listen to me. I know you think I'm a moron. That's why you listen to my podcast, right? Because you're like, what's this idiot going to say today? Guys, never break up with your girlfriend. Get her to break up with you. If it's your idea, she's going to resist it. Patriarchy. If it's her idea, you go girl boss. Fish bicycle. Strong, independent. You put what you want into her head and you let it come out of her mouth and you say, sweetheart, that is a wonderful idea. Goldie, so our daughter is going to marry the tailor, not the butcher? And she's like, our daughter is going to marry the tailor. And Tevye's like, that's a brilliant idea, sweetheart. Let's go back to bed. It's fucking hilarious. Absolutely fucking hilarious. It's hilarious because it's true. So that happens. And we have sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. Then we have the wedding dance, and we're at the wedding, and the tailor and Tidal are getting married, and oh, we're dancing, and the men and the women are dancing separate from each other. They don't dance together. Because we keep the men over here, and we keep the girls over there. You know, we don't need temptations. Oh my God, temptations. So now meanwhile, to go back in time a little bit, the second daughter, whose name is, what the hell is her name? Hoddle. So the second oldest daughter, Hoddle, a young man from Kiev, or Kiev, or however the fuck you're supposed to pronounce it. I don't care. Can we just fucking nuke Ukraine and get it over with? I don't fucking care how it's pronounced. A young man from Kiev shows up in town. He's been to college. And he's read Lenin. And he's a communist. He's all for the workers. And he's against the employers. Because, of course, all the communists were Jews. And all the Jews are communist. So at first, Hoddle is not interested because he's this, you know, radical commie going against traditions and everything. And then, what the hell is his name? Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, Perchik. His name's Perchik. Perchik dances with Hoddle. He's like, we're doing in Kiev, in the city, at the university, men and women dance together. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Men and women can't dance together. He says, yes, they can. And they do it like this. And he dances with her. And oh, as they're dancing, suddenly her cold heart warms up. Because, oh, he's such a rebel. Oh, he's a rebel. Does he have any tattoos? Criminal record, maybe? He's going against what her father would approve of. He's a rebel. Oh, who do the girls go for? Oh! So now we go forward to the wedding. By this point, oh, the romance has developed and they're eyeballing each other all the time. She's giving him fucking free membership in her OnlyFans. And at the wedding, they dance together. And everybody's like, oh, gasp. And then Tevye says, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to dance with my wife. And she's like, I'm not dancing with you. And he's like, yes, you are. Get your bitch ass out here. And you are going to dance with me. Now. And she comes and they dance. And pretty soon everybody, all men are dancing with women. And dogs and cats are getting married. And homosexuals are out on the street showing their penises to 8-year-old boys. And drag queens are reading story time. And parents are injecting their children with hormone blockers. Because, ooh, we don't want to be kike-phobic, do we? So tradition is up for grabs. We're tossing tradition out. How far do we go tossing tradition out? See, this is an important question. This is what the play is about. Oh, tradition coming into conflict with the modernity. Modernity. There's a word I don't use a lot. Brett over at America.org uses the word modernity quite a bit. And I think it's a word I need to use more often. All right, we get through the wedding. We go to intermission, which is supposed to be 15 minutes. Takes a lot longer because the boomers are so fucking slow getting their goddamn white wine in the concession line. It's like half of you should be wearing diapers. You should not be drinking beverages during a play that's like 3.5 hours long. First act ran close to 1:50. I felt like it was, again, I think it was a little long because there were some pacing issues at the beginning because everybody was scared to say the lines that are funny because they're funny. because they're true. But we got through it. All right, we now come to, look at my notes here. We have the third daughter, whose name is Hava. She's the youngest. And how old are these girls? Hava, I mean, she can't be like but 15. I mean, there's some. Why are there no accusations? Oh, wait, because they're Jews. You can't accuse Jews of pedophilia. Now, if I dated a 15-year-old girl, all hell would break loose. But when a Jew does it, it's not a Jew. Hoddle is, 16 or 17. So Hava, she's the youngest of the three daughters. And she likes reading books. And so they're in Russia, and there's obviously a Russian population there as well. The constable of the town is a Russian, and of course he has his deputies. Well, there is this balance of, how do we want to say this? Okay, so the Russian constable doesn't necessarily dislike the Jews, and he quite likes Tavia. In fact, he tells Tavia at one point in the play, you know, you'd be okay if you just weren't a Russian, if you weren't a Jewish pig. And there's this delicate sort of balance, because the constable has to keep his superiors happy by intimidating the Jews and shitting on them every now and then. But at the same time, he's not really a malicious person. He doesn't really want to do this. He's doing what he's got to do to keep his job. So during the wedding party, the constable and his deputies actually show up, and he tells the deputy, he's like, sorry, I warned you this was coming, because he did. He said, look, my superiors have told me I got to come in and, you know, break some of your stuff sometime to keep you in line. And I'm telling you, Tavia, so that you can warn everybody else that this is going to happen, and I have to do it. So he comes in to the wedding, and he tells his boys, all right, go break shit, and they break some shit, and he says, all right, that's enough, stop. All right, sorry, Tavia, but I had to do this, now we're leaving. So Hava, she likes reading the books, and one of the constable's deputies, he likes reading the books too, and he's seen her at the used bookstore, and she's pretty cute. I mean, you know, for a Jewish pig and everything. So he's like, hey, babe, would you like to borrow this book? Now, see, this used to be a way you could meet girls. You could say, hey, I see you like reading. Would you like to borrow a book? I mean, I haven't seen a woman reading a book. I can remember going out in public coffee shops, and girls would be sitting there reading books. I remember one time coming home from a run in Fort Collins, and I'm walking down the street there through Old Town, and there's this cute redhead sitting there outside the coffee shop reading a book. And I stopped and I asked her, hey, what are you reading? And we talked for a minute. It didn't go anywhere because I don't remember what happened, but I was not, for whatever reason, I was not impressed. I don't remember if she had a nose ring that I didn't see from a distance, or if she just didn't seem interested, whatever. But the point is, I saw a girl. Okay, a girl, they're the one, they have the bumps on their chest. The girl reading a book. And you could use that as a way to start a conversation with them. For you Zoomers out there, you're like, what the fuck is this old guy talking about? So the Russian, he says, hey, you're mighty cute. You want to borrow my book? And of course, I don't want to borrow your book. He says, well, you should borrow your book anyway. Borrow my book anyway. Because if you borrow the book, then you can read it. Then after you've read it, you have to bring it back to me. And when you bring it back to me, I can say, how did you like it? And then we can have a conversation about the books. I see you can tell he's young, because he thought he's going to have a conversation with a woman about a book. Right? We all know the only thing women converse about today is themselves. Did you see my Instagram? Do you know how many people follow me on OnlyFans? I'm kind of a big deal on OnlyFans. Did you see my titty pictures? It'll cost you $5. Why are men so creepy? But once upon a time, girls read books, and perhaps you could actually have a conversation with them. I know what you're saying. You're saying, great one, she's not a girl, she's a Jew. Let go of the Jew thing. Just let fucking go of the Jew thing, guys. I know you're really hung up on Jews, okay? You can go through life being constantly angry about everything, or you can just fucking relax and you can enjoy yourself now and then. Besides, don't worry, we're going to come back to the Jew thing. Trust me. All right, so that's beginning to develop. So now we're in Act 2. The wedding is over. Now Perchik and Hoddle, they have their number, and he sings, "Now I Have Everything." And here's the song. She says, he says, "Now I have everything, blah, blah, everything and a little bit more. Besides having everything, I know what everything is for. Someone to die for. No, sorry. Something to die for. Someone to live for." So he has something to die for. His ideology, his communism, right? His Leninism. But he has someone to live for. A girl. Wow, can you imagine in the modern day thing? I have someone to live for. Who's that? My girl. People look at you like you're insane. You mean the chick who's going to divorce rape you 3 years from now and fuck your best friend? You'd live for her? But the point is, he does his whole song about how he has everything and he knows what it's for, and something to die for and someone to live for. He's got his beliefs, he's got his ideology, he's got the world he wants to create. Ignore the fact that he's trying to create it through fucking Leninism, okay? Insert whatever the fuck you want. It could be Christianity, it could be anarcho-capitalism, it could be voting Republican, it could be whatever the fuck you want. The point is, he is a man, he has a mission, okay? He's got a mission. And he's got a woman who loves him and supports him and that he loves in return. I know this is hard to believe. It's a musical. It's fictitious. We don't have this in real life. So anyhow, they go to Tevye. They're like, "We want to get married." And he's like, "What the fuck is going on? Okay, just because I let your older daughter marry the person she wants to get married to, now you think I'm supposed to let you get married to the person you want to get married to?" She said, "But Papa, we love each other." And he's like, "What is this fucking love shit?" So then he does, more of his on this hand, on that hand. And finally he says, "All right, fuck it. You guys can get married." And then he goes to his wife and they're getting married. And she's like, Golda says, "He has nothing," because what's important to women? Money. See, it's funny because it's true. And Tevye is just like, "Will you just shut up and go with it? It's going to happen. You're welcome." All right, so then he has to go back to Kiev. Perchik has to go back to Kiev because there's some kind of demonstration or protest or whatever commies do to get attention. This was before OnlyFans, right? So whatever communists did before OnlyFans in order to get attention. And he ends up getting arrested and sent to Siberia. And Hoddle goes to her father and she says, "I have to leave. I have to go to Siberia to be with him." And he's like, "It's going to be cold. Are you sure you want to do this?" And she says that she has to go because he is doing, quote, "the greatest work a man can do," unquote. And she is going to Siberia to be with him, to be there for him. Now, at this point, half of you at least are dying of laughter. The idea of a woman going to a place that is cold to support her man is so far out of the realm of believability in the world we live in. But in theater, these things happen. So it's a very sad scene. It's a very sad scene. All right. Meanwhile, what's her name? The young one who's seeing the Russian. Hava. So meanwhile, Hava has gone to her father. She's seen all this. Father, I'm in love with this guy. And he's a Russian. And the Russian kid is there. And now, you see, when one daughter wants to marry the poor tailor, who's one of his goals is to save up and buy a sewing machine so he can make better clothing, so he can make more money, right? But he's poor, he's ambitious, but he's poor as fuck, and he's really, really nerdy. Very simpy. All right, Tavia's okay with that. And his second daughter, she wants to marry a communist. This kid who wants to just shit all over Jewish tradition, wants men and women to dance together, wants to, you know, power to the workers, and is going to protest and is now in prison. He wasn't just sent to Siberia. He's sent to Siberia and put inside a prison in Siberia, right? But okay, fine. My daughter can marry this fucking loser who's, you know, probably going to die in jail or something. But then the youngest daughter comes forth and says, I would like to marry a Russian. I would like to engage in race mixing. Oh no. Now Tavia's foot comes the fuck down. Like a thunderbolt from heaven. Negative, bitch. There will be no race mixing. You are Jewish. As it says in the good book, quote, each will seek his own kind, unquote. That's the line Tavia throws out. This is in the Bible, apparently. Maybe, I don't know if it really is or not. I'm going to assume it is because you would think someone would fact check this. So I would think that anytime they put in a quote from the Bible, maybe it's actually in there. I should check up on that though. Each will seek his own kind, unless it's a white woman, in which case she will get impregnated by as many niggers as possible. But my Jewish daughter, oh, she's not going to marry a Russian. There will be none of that. So then she sneaks off and she marries the Russian anyhow, and Tavia disowns her. She is cast out of the family by him. She makes an appearance later on when they're all leaving because they've been thrown out of the town, and she, you know, everybody kind of very, very tentatively talks to her because Tavia will not talk to her because Tavia has disowned her, and it's like, okay, I'm gonna say something to my sister, but I can't say too much because my father will beat my ass because he's actually serious. He, unlike white people, is actually serious about enforcing this race mixing thing. So you see, Tavia, he'll bend on all these other things, but he's not gonna bend on the race mixing. Because being a Jew is more important than everything else. Maybe we could learn from the Jews. Just saying. We could try. We could have a shot at it. So anyhow, we're approaching the end of the play. You know, there's been a bunch of songs. Now I have everything. We get the rebuttal. Yeah, do you love me? The rumor, the telephone song. This happens before this stuff. There's a great song in here where there's a rumor spreading, and it's like the telephone game. Where, you know, somebody says, oh, this thing happened, and then that person repeats it to someone else, but it gets magnified, and then that person repeats it to someone else, and that gets magnified. That's hilarious. And then Huddle, she's going far from the home she loves because she's going to Siberia to be with her man because she's going to support her man, which I know is still incredibly hard for you to believe. It's difficult for me to believe. Then, all right, the constable shows up. He says, the paperwork came in today. All of you have 3 days to sell your houses, pack your stuff, and get the fuck out of town. Don't care where you go, but you can't be here anymore. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Oh, your home is here. You can't go home, and you can't stay here. Get your shit. Go. 3 days. See ya, suckers. So like, oh, what are we going to do? Well, and then the rabbi comes, we've been waiting so, not the rabbi. One of the people comes out and says, oh, we've been waiting so long for the Messiah. According to some people, his name was Jesus and he already showed up. We've been waiting so long for the Messiah. Maybe this would be a good time for him to come. And the rabbi says, well, we'll have to wait for him someplace else. Like we've done 106 times before. And then the kikes get kicked out of town. And there's another line. Our forefathers have been forced out of many places. Yeah, they have. Because you're really fucking annoying. You're even more annoying than white women. Which I know is hard to believe. Now, are you as more annoying than niggers? Yeah, that's up for grabs. So you see, this play, it's about the Jews. But it's also about the woods. Right? Into the woods. Into the woods. What is Into the Woods about? I found the Bernadette Peters Into the Woods on YouTube. I'm going to put the link. Maybe the link will be in the show notes for this so that those of you who have not seen it can watch it. Right? The woods are the trials and tribulations of life. When you're going into the woods, you know, that you're going out there to do this thing, to accomplish this thing, to overcome. This is the shit that life throws at you, and you have to go into the woods on your mission, and you have to do this thing and get this thing and become this person and bring this back and make something out of it. That's the woods. And this play is also about the woods. It's about tradition. How does it deal with modernity? Where do you draw the line? How do you accept what happens to you when you're told you have 3 days to get out of town? I mean, do you rebel? Do you leave? You know, when somebody comes in to crash up your wedding, what do you do? When you don't have the political power, what do you do? When your daughter wants to race mix, what do you do? When some communist kid is shitting on your traditions and wants to bang your daughter, what do you do? It was right about this time, somebody in the audience, probably a boomer woman, let out a really loud fart. To conclude, all of the, I don't even know what the word for it is right offhand, irony. So Yenta, the matchmaker, she's the one who goes throughout the play, matching up the boys and the girls. Right? Hence, she's the matchmaker. That's me stating the obvious. Got to do what I do best. So everybody's scattering. Some of the Jews are going over here, and some are going to America, and yada, yada, yada. And she comes to Goldie. She says, I'm going to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem. I am going to go there, and I am going to do what I'm good at doing. I am going to be a matchmaker. She says, I am going to the Holy Land to help our people multiply. Help our people multiply. Can you imagine if a white person said, I'm going to do something to help our people multiply? Isn't it amazing how when a Jew says it, it's okay? But when a white person says it, I'm going to help our people. What do you mean our people? You're a racist. But when Jews, oh, I'm going to go to the Holy Land and help our people multiply. Not one boomer woman in the audience gasp at that. No gasping at that. A lot of gasping at young women having a man decide who they should marry so that they don't fuck up and make stupid decisions. Lots of gasping at that. But no gasping whatsoever at Jews multiplying. When Tavia put his foot down on the race mixing, no gasping whatsoever. None. Boomer women were totally okay with that. Now, had that Russian deputy been a nigger, maybe there'd have been some gasping. See, there was an opportunity there for some creative casting, because you may not know this, but the first Russians were actually niggers. There's archaeological evidence to support this. Overall, the play was fairly well done. I made some different choices here and there, but I mean, that holds true for almost any play or musical that I see. Overall, it was fairly well done. Yeah, it's a Jewish propaganda piece, but it's a Jewish propaganda piece that is so well written and has such great songs that you can let it slide. Until the end, I felt no sorrow for the Jews getting evicted. Almost. It was close. For a brief moment, I almost felt this twinge. But then Yinta comes out there with her, oh, I'm going to help our people multiply. And I'm like, oh, God, more Jews. Oh, shit. Where's Hitler when you need him? And then to wrap it all up, They were using a projector to put colors on the psych upstage, and something happened with the projector, and so the menu screen for the projector came up on the back of the theater set on the psych. Yeah, for those of you who don't know what a psych is the white fabric at the very back of the theater, and you project color on it. So right when it's night, you put dark blue. When it's daytime, you can put some orange or some yellows or whatever. You change the color of the lights on the psych. Well, they were shooting the light on the psych with a projector, just doing, you know, red, blue, whatever, which is a common tactic nowadays. And the projector menu popped up on the psych. So at the end of the play, it went to blackout. The stage is completely dark, except for this giant projector menu on the back wall. Good job, guys. Excellent showing by your technical crew. So there you go. That is Fiddler on the Roof, according to the great one. Whew. All right, I'm worn out. I was feeling energized for a bit. Now I'm starting to feel a little shitty again. My voice is getting a little bit rough. Thanks for listening. I apologize for any crap you had to... Well, all my podcasts are kind of crappy. But anyway, you'll get over it. Oh, by the way, TJ Martinell, since the last we talked about him, he's put out two more podcasts. And tjmartinell.com, I can recommend you listen to them. I listen to them both. There's some pretty good stuff in there. He makes some very good points about boomers, some things I didn't really think of. And even though what he says, this is going to be a long podcast, so you might want to buckle down, he did not do a long podcast. TJ's young. He still doesn't know what long is. You know, TJ probably still thinks it is his little, you know, 4-inch PP is long. That's not long. So it's not actually that long, trust me. I'm not talking about his PP. I'm talking about his podcast. The PP thing was a joke. I don't know the length of TJ Martinell's PP. Aaron Clary might. You could ask him. Of course, everything looks bigger to Aaron because he's so short. Anyhow, TJ's got two new podcasts out since the last time I talked about his podcast, and they're both very good. And if you don't get any more of me this week because I'm being sicky poo and being a baby, then go over to tjmartinell.com and check those out. And I will catch you cats on the flip side.